So, I mean, you know, this is a theme that we've had ever since, I would argue, the November election was stolen.
Okay.
And after what's happened with Biden's presidency and the kinds of policies he's trying to put into place. So I think that the totality of the world that I'm looking at is not very helpful right now. And I think that what we've tried to do here on the show is to take what's going on a weekly basis and give you some context to it so that people can understand just exactly what is taking place. And this morning, as a follow-up to that, I want to first get into this discussion about Liz Cheney and the conflict within the Republican Party. You say, well, who cares about that? That's the Republican Party. Well, it's important because one of the things that she's trying to point out is that somehow, you know, if you support Trump and accept, quote unquote, Trump's lies, then you're hurting not only the party, but you're hurting the country too. And she discusses this in detail, and I'll talk about that. The other thing I want to talk about too is the link between this Cheney version of the Republican Party and the clear question about how is it that the Chamber of Commerce supported 23 Democrats in 2020, 15 of whom won, and it's that margin of victory that we're dealing with in the House today. Now, here we are. As Tea Party people, we've always been skeptical of what's going on with certain elements of the Republican Party. And the Chamber of Commerce and other groups have been part of that skepticism. So Kim Strassel from the Wall Street Journal, great reporter, wrote this article about this question about what is the chamber really doing? And I think it bears, you know, it has an impact on us, and it bears some time to take a look at what is going on there and why we have to be, again, skeptical. The frame of reference here, 2010, the Tea Party gave the Republicans back to the House, and in 2014, we helped them get the Senate too. So why is it that when we give them power, they don't live up to it? And Mark, it is an ongoing issue. And although I'm not going to talk a lot about state stuff today, I want to hold until next week on what happened with the legislature. But the fact of the matter is that we have a nominally red state, and yet we have a governor who does nothing to support what other red state governors like DeSantis and Abbott in Texas are doing, protecting the Constitution by declaring those states constitutional sanctuary states and other things that are going on. So again, our skepticism of the Republican Party is, I think, well deserved. And I want to talk a little bit about that, okay?
Okay.
And I do also want to talk some, as a close, right before the close, about some of the foreign policy questions that are going on. And I've touched on these practically every week that I'm here. But this question about what's going on with the Iranians and how the Biden people are playing footsie with these people, I think that's an important thing for us to cover. And then I'll wrap it up with a discussion of our Tax Day rally, which we talked about last week, and Lori had, I think, something on the Facebook announcing it. We had over 100 people there, and I think it was, you know, it was well attended, but the key thing was we had a lot of new people there. We had young people there, and I think that that's a testament to the issues that are going on and people are concerned about it, particularly the younger generation who's showing up. So I want to talk a little bit about that too. All in 30 minutes. How can this be? And with Lori not here, maybe the cat's away, the mice will play, and we'll stay on longer. Oh, no. Oh, no, we can't have that.
Oh, no, can't have that.
Okay. All right, I don't want to get you in trouble, so we'll stay on schedule.
Well, yeah. Okay,
I know.
We'll see.
All right.
Cat
All right,
is away.
So let's talk about Liz Cheney. All right, her basic argument is that what's happening here is that the Republican Party has always stood for conservative values such as standing by the Constitution, okay? And in many respects, the whole idea here is that Trump is undermining the constitutional framework and law and order because he keeps saying that the election of 2020 was stolen. Now, I've had plenty of time to talk about this, so I'm not going to repeat everything. But I have to say, if Liz Cheney basically is arguing that there was no steal in 2020, I just don't get that. And if that's going to be the litmus test for, quote, true blood, true blue Republicans, then I think she's way off base, okay? And here's the argument I would make. I know that when Mo Brooks was down here, he talked about, and I've related to everyone here, the problems that he saw with the fraud in Arizona, okay? Now, I separate fraud from the unconstitutional attacks that were done on Georgia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, and Wisconsin, okay? And Arizona to a certain degree, too. Those unconstitutional attacks, to me, form the centerpiece of the argument that there was an unconstitutional changing of the election laws in those states. And as such, the results are clearly not correct. Had those changes not occurred, do you think for a second that Trump wouldn't have been elected? I mean, as it was, he was winning in those states until four of them stopped counting in the middle of the night. And then, suddenly, 149,000 votes come in to Wisconsin. Another 149,000 come in to, I think it was Michigan. In Pennsylvania, there were 120,000 late ballot votes that came in that were unconstitutional, but nevertheless, they came in. Justice Alito told them, do not integrate those ballots into the normal count. And yet they did it. So, Mark, to me, it makes a whole lot of sense to remain very skeptical of the election returns in 2020. And again, as Mo Brooks pointed out, and I mean, I made this point when he, right after he was here, okay? He made these charges, okay? Dead people voted in the thousands. False addresses were sent out by the registrar of voters. People gave false addresses, and those people got ballots. They had ballots sent out to people who were not even in the state. And I'm not talking about people who legally, you know, could vote. I mean, as when I was in the Marine Corps, we always absentee balloted in Louisiana. That was our home state. So I understand that there are people who move and you know, they're going to be out and they get an absentee ballot. That's fine. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about Arizona being forced to send out ballots to everyone on the registrar's list. And you and I know very well that many of these registrar's lists are not up to date. And so the very real possibility of fraud was there, and it happened. And we're still going through a forensic account of the Maricopa, which is their biggest county, Maricopa election returns. So to suggest that this is all the figment of Trump's imagination, that nothing really happened, and again, like I said, the fraud that Mo Brooks talked about, I think is quite real. But in my view, some of those things are going to happen in any election. There's no question about that. But the issue, the bigger issue, is the constitutional one, and I don't see how Cheney can get away with not talking about that. I mean, it's like, okay, let's just get away from it. And this argument that law and order is under attack by Cheney because Trump keeps talking about the 2020 stolen election, it seems to me just the opposite, that law and order was under attack by what happened, and we're not going to sit by and let it happen again. Thus is born the whole, you know, election integrity movement, which we've seen state after state after state. Georgia, the most recent one, what did they do? They fixed the problems that were there in 2020, which were part and parcel of, you know, Stacey Abrams and her attempts to change the election laws, okay, get ballots to everyone, ballots that did not have to be checked against the registrar's database, as flawed as that database might have been. Oh, no, it didn't matter. And we're supposed to sit back and let Liz Cheney say, oh, it's okay, nothing happened. BS, okay? And Lori, if you're listening, I'm being careful here. I'm not going to get Mark in trouble. But the point is, this is crap, okay? It really is. And it drives me crazy when someone like Cheney, who is a nominal conservative, goes down this road of listing the same thing that the Democratic talking points are. I'm sorry, it doesn't wash. So I don't know, we're going to see how this thing works itself out, okay? But this is part of this never Trumper business. And these people who were never Trumpers, they had lots of money, they had big donations. They made a lot of money off of it, if you remember. There's major scandal with what was going on with this, okay? But the never Trumpers have infiltrated into the mainstream of the Republican Party. And unfortunately, Liz Cheney, I mean, she's got a pedigree a mile long as far as being a conservative. Her father, you know, Vice President Cheney, he was the Secretary of Defense. He was a congressman. I mean, I've always been a fan of Dick Cheney. I know a lot of people aren't, but I will say this, you know, but the pedigree stops with her, because here we are. I mean, she is destroying the base of the Republican Party that is so supportive of Trump. 75 million people or so voted for him, and they don't want to hear the stuff from Liz Cheney, a congresswoman from Wyoming. And that's all fine and dandy. She's, you know, she's made it there herself, and she's, you know, obviously, she didn't make it there herself because she's got that name in Wyoming. Okay, fine. But the point is, she is a person of her own making, and I think she should be respected for that. In fact, she has been well respected until now. And I just don't get it. And I think that, you know, we've got to be able to, you know, call some of these people out and say, look, you've gone too far. This doesn't make sense. So that's where I am on that. And I hope that people who are listening to this might just go ahead and, you know, dial up Liz Cheney in D.C. and leave a message and tell her, how can you possibly think you're doing right by the country and by the Republican Party by saying that there was no steal? Election integrity was the critical part of their election stealing. And they knew what they were doing with the Democrats. You don't think Stacey Abrams knew ahead of time what she was doing? Please, come on, Liz. You know, get in the game. I almost said a bad word there, Mark. But I held off.
No bad words.
Okay, so let's examine this business though of why you have mainstream organizations such as the Chamber of Commerce that took a position to try to support 23 Democrats that were running in 2020. As I said earlier, 15 of those 23 won re-election. Now, one can argue, as Strassel suggests in her article, that maybe the chamber was just trying to get on the good side of Pelosi and, you know, a seat at the table thinking here, okay? So this question, though, has been raised. Thank you, Mark. We just got some water here. That's good. I haven't had a coughing spell yet. Okay. So we have this situation where these people who were supported by the chamber actually had a track record. And their track record was anti-business on any number of issues, okay? And I'm not going to get into every specific one. But it was there for all to see. And yet, the chamber went ahead and supported them. And so, here now you have Nancy Pelosi with a six-seat margin. I mean, it makes no sense. It makes absolutely no sense. And yet that's what has happened. And I go back to what I suggested to you at the beginning of this when I was talking to Mark. You have a situation where these kinds of organizations end up supporting the wrong people, and in the end, despite our skepticism about the Republican Party, it sure would be better to have a Speaker McCarthy rather than Speaker Pelosi. Okay? It's just that simple. And yet, you have organizations like the Chamber moving in this direction. It makes no sense. So I do think that in total, when you talk about the Liz Cheney never Trumper factor, and then you start getting a look into the inner workings of the Chamber of Commerce and what they're doing, it certainly makes one skeptical of how in the world are we expected to defeat Biden and the radical left if we've got organizations that are supposedly friendly to business and supposedly friendly to the Republican Party doing things like that. And I realize that business, big business, has now been taken over in many, many respects by the Democratic Party for a variety of different reasons, okay? But we're talking about business that is our small business operators, which is the lifeblood of the economy, okay? And these Democrats are going to hurt them. We talked about this last week. The taxes that Biden and them are talking about are going to negatively impact on small business, which is where such a high percentage of our jobs come from, the creation by small businesses. So I think that, you know, looking carefully at what is going on, both with the Liz Cheney phenomenon and with the Chamber of Commerce doing those kinds of things that it did in 2020, we may not have that same problem down here, but I think it's well worth looking into to make sure that any candidate that's running, you know, can state unequivocally that they do not agree with what the Chamber is doing, and the Club for Growth, by that matter. And this was an issue in 2020 between Bill Hightower and Jerry Carl. And I think that, you know, we did our homework on that, but how many other people are doing their homework? I think it's important that we take a look at all of this. All right, let me talk about foreign policy quickly here, okay? You know where the Iranians are in the world mix, okay? They are the number one supporter of terrorism in the world. They have regional domination as their goal. Trump shut them down, killed Soleimani, imposed sanctions, got the UN sanctions to stick, and had Iran on its knees. They couldn't send money to their groups, Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis in Yemen. They were shut down. Now, two things have happened. One, Biden, who believed in the nuclear deal, the JCPOA, the flawed nuclear deal that Obama brought about. I've talked enough about that. I'm not going to get into a replay of all that. But let's just say this, that the intellectual framework for Obama and the nuclear deal was an attempt to try to, well, at least let's put it this way, this was their talking point, to try to contain the Iranian nuclear expansion and getting the bomb, essentially. There was no way that was ever going to happen, and yet Biden has bought into it again. And now you have, last week you had a meeting between the Iranians and Americans, Blinken and these folks. He's our Secretary of State. The Iranians will not come to the table unless Trump's sanctions are removed. But think about this. Even if they come to the table, which they're not going to, what are we going to get out of it? Do you think for a second that they're going to agree to stopping or giving up their nuclear the pursuit of their nuclear arms? No. And here's why they will say no. They just signed a deal with the Chinese. Ah, yes, our friendly Xinhua, okay? So here we are with a situation where the number one state sponsor of terror has now signed a major economic deal to send the Chinese Iranian oil in return for the Chinese support with cash and with infrastructure programs. So what does this do to the Trump equation that says sanctions and a robust opposition could contain Iranians' desires to do more damage in the world and get a nuclear weapon? And the short answer to that is we are completely adrift because they will now have the means to continue to do what they were trying to do in terms of their foreign policy, the support of terror, and the domination of the region. These are real problems. American foreign policy over the last 40 years has tried to maintain the oil supply to essentially Japan and Europe from the Middle East. It's a major threat. We also know that any problems in the Middle East would interrupt that oil supply. That hasn't changed. And if the Iranians are able to disrupt Saudi oil, which they attacked Saudi oil fields last year, 5% of the Saudi oil was off the table. If they can get away with that this time, what are the consequences? If American foreign policy needed to maintain oil and maintain, you know, protection from terrorism, which we accomplished with the killing of bin Laden, Soleimani, and all the rest of them, the ISIS guy, that's one of our major foreign policy issues, not letting the homeland be attacked again like it was in 9/11. That is just going to go away with the Iranians having all of the support that they need to fund their terror. We've already known this. They had al-Qaeda operatives in Iran before 9/11. They passed through Iran going to the United States to do the 9/11 job. They're still there. I mean, this is, again, one of these issues. You know, the enemy of my enemy gets to be my friend. They understand that. So my point here is that this business with China and Iran having some sort of an agreement is deadly. And Biden and these people are not intellectually inclined to challenge them, just like they're not inclined to challenge the Chinese. And I've talked about that. I'm not going to talk about it right now. It's another separate issue. But the warnings are there, and we better heed them, or it's going to be an extremely bad day soon. Okay, let me shift to our local issues, okay? First of all, we had a great rally the other day. We had a chance to talk, listen to some really great speakers. Jim Ziegler came and talked about the obituary to Governor Ivey's prison plan. Now, I'll talk more about this because what's happening is the lawsuit that Ziegler filed will probably be heard this week, and that lawsuit is the death knell of Ivey's prison plan. We'll see how this goes, okay? But Jim Ziegler had a great discussion. Pastor Rusty Johnson talked about cancel culture. You know the roots of cancel culture? Cain and Abel. Cain didn't want to listen to Abel, so he killed him. The communists have been trying to kill religion, the Christianity, since 1917 when Lenin took over. So please, think about cancel culture within that framework. And you see that there's a whole lot there that is going on today that has its roots a long time ago. We had another pastor talk about common sense versus nonsense, all the nonsense that you hear coming out of Washington, this whole business of, you know, LGBTQ and we're going to get rid of all the pronouns, he and she, blah, blah, blah. I'm sorry, it is nonsense. And we need to think through this, because this nonsense cannot be allowed to get into our schools. Again, I've mentioned this before, and we had this come up the other day at the rally. You know, HB 440 was killed. Shane Stringer, who is a House member from the Mobile area, spoke, talked about just how dysfunctional this whole thing was and how discouraging it was to see people not take action against those things that need to be taken care of. I mean, they're going crazy over the gaming bill, going crazy over passing marijuana laws, although the marijuana, listen, medical marijuana, I can understand in terms of how to use it properly, but the law that they passed has all sorts of, you know, overhead issues that were very negative, which I've talked about before, creating this monstrous commission, a security force to go along with it, taxing power. So there were a lot of flaws to this, but the bottom line is that, you know, what was their focus? Their focus wasn't on declaring a constitutional sanctuary state here in Alabama. It wasn't on making sure that any kind of federal intervention on gun laws would not be supported. And these are bills that we had suggested, talked to them about it, but there was no protection given to our right to bear arms as other states have seen them do. Arizona, Texas, Florida. You know? Why is it that we're moving, and I ask this question to our people out there, to our audience. Why are we more motivated about doing the right thing than these people that are up there in Montgomery? I mean, this is the BS factor to the nth degree, and that's the problem with this. So we did talk about that. We certainly wanted to make sure that even though HB 440 was killed, that we want to make sure that the 1619 Project and critical race theory are stopped in their tracks. Now, for those of you down here, you know, who are listening in Fairhope and in Baldwin County, I hope that you'll be able to, and I'll send this to Lori so that she can post it on her Facebook. But on May 20th at 4:30, the Baldwin County Board of Education has a meeting, okay? This is a regular meeting. It's 4:30 in the afternoon. The work session goes first, the meeting goes second, and it's going to be in their Baymanette office, which I'll send Lori a link to that so y'all know how to get there. But the point of this is that we, the people, have got to show up and make sure our opinions are made known. I've already talked to our district board member, Cecil Christenberry. Cecil's totally opposed to 1619, and I'm going to have Cecil come on and we'll talk about this and the critical race theory. But the fact of the matter is, Cecil's one vote. We have got to make sure that the rest of those board members understand the significance of this and the degree to which they cannot support this if they think they're going to get reelected. And that's the bottom line on this. So here we are. It's now 10:35, and Mark is not giving me the hook yet, but we've got Lori standing over us, watching carefully to make sure that I do not violate that 35-minute rule. All right, so folks, lots to think about, lots to do. Please take some notes and come to the Baldwin County Board of Education meeting in May 20th, 4:30 p.m. up in Baymanette. Next week, I will be back, God willing. Until then, you all take care. Get through the rain today, and hopefully we'll have some nice weather soon. But God bless, and hopefully everybody had a good, really good Mother's Day. You know, happy Mother's Day to all of those out there. Without mothers, I just fell into the pronoun problem here. It's birthing people, I think, is the new term. Whatever it is, forget about it. All you moms out there, we love you. Thank you for all you did. All right, Mark, take care. Have a good week, guy.
Thank you, Doctor.
Bye now.
All right. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campo Minosi. Adjunct professor of political science at Spring College. If you missed part of the show or want to tell a friend, you can listen later at WABF 1480.com. It's Briggs Enterprises with locations in Malbus, Shell Station on 181, Highway 98 in Daphne, Highway 90 in Daphne, and with their state-of-the-art car wash facility in Malbus. Thank you, Spriggs Enterprises, for making this. And once again, this has been the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi. We now get back to more music on 1480 WABF.
Hey, this is Dr. Lou Campomenosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign. Please join me for my new talk show, Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review, Monday mornings after Swap Shop from 10:05 until 10:35. We will be covering national, state, and local news from a conservative perspective. Listen live on the radio or online. Listen later at WABFradio.com. I know I'd go.